for the Business of Tech, digging into the biggest business stories from the world of technology. Here's your host, Jonathan Huma.
Welcome back to The Mainframe. Whether you're about bits and bytes or dollars and cents, we've got you covered. Coming up this week, email scams are nothing new, and trying to stay ahead of the bad guys can be a challenge, but there's a new tool in town for companies. It's an artificial intelligence system which raises alarm bells if an emailer is suspected of impersonating an executive or CEO. But first, are cryptocurrency miners costing PC gamers more money? It turns out high-end GPUs are a relatively cheap way for anyone to get into the mining business, but it's led to a shortage, meaning gamers who need the high-end processors to render graphics may be paying more. Will this trend last? Will graphic card companies start ramping up production to take advantage of the spike in sales? Or will someone new enter the arena? To help answer those questions, I'm joined by Cameron Welsh, senior instructor at the UFC's Haskane School of Business. So, Cameron, let's start with the why. Why are these high-end graphics cards so appealing to someone looking to cash in on cryptocurrency mining?
Yeah, so the basic idea there is just that they do more calculations. So because of the high resolution nature of gaming, they need to do a lot of calculations. And that is basically the whole idea around cryptocurrency mining, is that the more calculations it can do in a shorter period of time, the better chances are that you are able to mine cryptocurrency in a quicker way.
So did this come as a shock to the big GPU producers? Did they see this coming at all?
I wouldn't think so. I think sort of, the biggest shock is probably the fact that the price of cryptocurrencies really took off. And we get sort of the speculators in terms of how do I get myself into cryptocurrency? And it's sort of like, I guess, if sort of akin to sort of the gold rush of the 1840s in California, or the late 1800s in the Yukon type of idea. So you would have had a run on gold mining equipment, and GPUs are a relatively available type of processor that's easy to come a hold of, although they do have their problems also in terms of when you're looking at crypto mining.
Yeah, and so maybe that leads to my next question here in terms of how companies approach creating GPUs here. Do you see eventually a system here where maybe they create dedicated GPUs just for miners? Is the market stable enough or large enough for them to be interested in that?
Probably not, because there's another trend that's starting to happen, and it's application-specific integrated circuits, or ASICs, which are, I think, the more serious miners, those people that are doing pools, the people that are involved in, so there's a trend a little bit to sort of cloud mining. Those are becoming probably a little, that's probably where the market's going to go in terms of this ASIC type of unit. And the biggest reason for that is they're probably as powerful or a little bit more powerful than a GPU in terms of processing. But the biggest cost is energy, and GPUs use a lot of energy. And so the cost of mining with a GPU is pretty expensive. And sort of with, I guess more the leading edge miners, this idea of a ASICs unit is more appealing because they use less energy. And so when you look at sort of payback or break even points, they're more efficient that way.
Interesting. So do you see then that companies already producing GPUs try and increase sales by sort of increasing production in the short term while that gap is filled? How do you see them sort of playing this out over the next little while here then, if, as you say, the more appealing product is more specifically designed for the end user?
Yeah, I think you're probably, I think maybe short term wise, you'll see that. It's really hard to sort of predict where they're going. I think the other big part too is the gaming market keeps expanding, and I guess the need for more sophisticated GPUs, and I think even gamers are probably going to become more energy conscious in terms of the energy use on their systems. So I think sort of a combination of things are going to drive where the GPU market goes. And I think one of the things that I think was sort of in the news the end of the year, I guess the beginning of the year, was around things like shortages of RAM chips or DRAM type of chips and that type of stuff. And I think between mining, I think increasing, I guess, even corporate use in terms of just the amount of data corporations are trying to manage, cryptocurrency mining, those type of things, I think that whole segment is seeing sort of where all that demand is coming from. And I think even probably in terms of just general computing, I think we're going to see demand in, I guess, more powerful units, companies sort of looking at technologies like blockchain and artificial intelligence and mixed reality and all those type of things. I think all of these things together are the things that are really going to drive the market.
And do you see that as something that will sort of help? I know you mentioned gamers there, and maybe not necessarily them specifically, but do you see that as something that'll help drive price points down on these? I mean, GPUs were expensive to begin with. If there's a run on them over Bitcoin here, you can bet that there's no incentive to drop the price on them now. Is that sort of where you see the future of those going, that if there's more demand, it'll help bring the price in? Or, as you say, just because of the nature of shortages and the fact that everyone wants them for different purposes, we'll still see them at those really, in some cases, really, really high price points.
I think we'll probably see them at fairly high price points and I think a lot of it is the upstream type of demand for the pieces that are involved in building the GPUs and the ASICs processors and all of those types of things. So I think, and from my understanding, I haven't looked at this in a little bit, but in terms of the actual producers of some of the upstream parts, there's less of them. And then also I think we're always sort of have this shortage of sort of rare earth metals and some of the sort of material components that are going to go into these units to power them, and sort of just sort of, as I say, the materials that go into them. So I think they're going to stay fairly high. And I was the other day, I just was looking at sort of the questions you sent out, just sort of looking at some of the pricing, even on these new application-specific integrated circuits, and the prices are really, really up there. I think the top-performing ones are probably in the $3,000 U.S. Price range.
Yeah, and is that just, again, is that maybe a function of the fact that there's only a couple companies that do it really well? I mean, do you see a space for a disruptor to come in and sort of try and take advantage of everything that we're seeing here? Or again, it probably goes back to the same thing here in terms of producing these things. It's just not possible for someone to easily get into that space and do it cheaper.
Yeah, I think it's probably a difficult space to probably get into. I think the disruptions will be more in terms of, I guess, the ability of the chips. And I think the big thing, especially when you look at sort of cryptocurrency, just because of the nature of it, the idea is you mine cryptocurrency by solving math equations. And about every 2 weeks or so, the speed of the math equations being calculated and solved increases. So they reset the math equations to be a little bit tougher. So they kind of reset, I guess, the underlying rules every couple of weeks. So I think the big thing in terms of a disruptor will be, I think, more on the power side of it in terms of the energy use piece of it, is how can we actually get the power we need to do the computations and really reduce that power piece. Because if you look at it now, I think, again, this is just some research that I did just recently, on even the new chips, crypto miners are probably looking at 14 to 18 months in terms of a break-even piece. And that should be, part of that is the cost of the unit itself. The biggest cost is really the cost of the energy that it's using in order to do the mining. And I think in terms of the popularity of mining pools, so groups of people getting together and sharing the profit in the end, there's new sort of cloud sort of pools that are occurring. I think those are things in order to help sort of the not so rich or person that doesn't have as much money really get into the cryptocurrency piece and start to reduce some of those costs a little bit.
This is all certainly an interesting example of unintended consequences, and it will be interesting to see what happens as the year goes on. Well, from cryptocurrency to email, companies are always working to stay one step ahead of people trying to scam them or their employees, and there's a new tool to help them do that. Trend Micro has rolled out an artificial intelligence system which raises alarm bells if an emailer is suspected of impersonating an executive or CEO. I'm joined by cybersecurity VP Greg Young. And Greg, how does the tech work?
Yeah, where this came from was, you know, historically we've been pretty good at finding things that are attached to emails that are bad. Almost every attack involves email today. About 94% plus of attacks will come by email. But as we got better at finding those things that were attached, the bad guys evolved to trying to impersonate people. And we're all, you know, familiar with the Nigerian prince example. And even that's evolved. Now we're into cases where people will imitate, a relative who is, traveling and say, hey, you know, I've been jailed and I need some money. Send it to me quickly. The next step was, impersonating executives, asking for wire transfers or significant business transactions. And that was the driver for where this technology came from.
Yeah. So then how does it actually work on the back end then? Is it, do you need a lot of samples to sort of figure it out? How much work does it need to do in order to sort of flag things and notice that maybe something isn't on the up and up?
The more examples, the better. The good news is that most executives do write a lot or have a lot of communications that can be analyzed by an artificial intelligence system. So by looking at all these previous examples, a pretty unique fingerprint can be resolved pretty quickly. Over the greater time, the better the sampling becomes and the more accurate it becomes.
Yeah, and accuracy, obviously, a big one here. What are the odds that an email that is really important doesn't get through? Is it too strict for that? How does that all work out?
The recommended settings are that if you're getting an email, let's say it looks like it's from your boss, but it is flagged as unusual, it'll be flagged as such. You'll still see it, but you'll get a warning that says, "Hey, you know, this looks unusual. We think this is a suspicious or forged communication. Well, what would you like to do with it?" And even just raising it to that level is a really big step over previously, where you'd be left on your own. And what kind of what part of the day you're in? Are you busy? Are you not? Are you paying careful attention? Would you catch it on your own, or do you need this kind of artificial intelligence to assist you?
So how would this be implemented then? Is this just as easy as putting a plug-in into your Outlook 365 or something, or how does that work?
Exactly right. It's a plug-in to the email system, and for high-value accounts or executives, it would analyze their previous communications, generate a unique fingerprint or characteristics based on about 7,000 characteristics, so it's much more than a person could do, and it's also not reverse engineerable, so as a bad guy, couldn't grab this sample from you and create phony emails from it. And the idea was it would flag communications that are suspicious or don't match these characteristics.
And you talked about how it's great for messages from people trying to impersonate CEOs or something like that. I mean, in theory, or maybe it already does, could this work for an entire email system? I guess you could be sort of taking samples of everyone's writing and making sure that everything is on the up and up.
That's definitely the next step. The first step today is really focusing on executives and the people who can and do really high-value transactions. And the next step will be to expand this. Again, there's such a deep look going on with this technology. It takes a lot of computing power. But I believe that much like antivirus on email attachments, that this is going to be commonplace in a few years.
You talk about the computing power there. I guess how difficult is it for that to go through these processes is here? And how quickly can it do that as well?
It's quite simple, actually. The analyzing of it, the real smarts is, I think, in just what to look for. So, for example, a lot of the work went into, analyzing things like, how many pronouns are used, how many sentences are in a paragraph. So analyzing what goes into a writing style analysis, the gathering of it, we just leave it up to the machines after that.
So how is this different then and I think you've sort of explained it there, but I'll ask it this way as well. How is this different than something that just sort of says, hey, this looks like spam? I mean, every email system now has a spam filter. It'll dump it either right into your trash or into your spam, and you can sort of adjust those settings as well. Is it really just sort of the brains and the way it operates? Is that sort of what separates it from a traditional spam blocker or something like that?
Yeah, it's a new generation. So historically, we've had what we call machine learning. So first of all, there's been antivirus, which looks for a specific sort of bad thing. The next step was what we call machine learning, which was looking at past indicators to see if something is bad. And that's kind of where we are today with a lot of the spam indicators and the like. This next step was getting more predictive. And that's what really the difference between artificial intelligence and machine learning is being able to look with great depth into individual sort of characteristics to make an assessment about future events. And that's the difference here is that it's really looking at writing style rather than just sort of the common indicators, like is this from a Gmail address? Are they specifically asking for money? Some of those really easy to spot indicators we've had in the past.
Yeah, and you sort of mentioned it off the top there, and again, in sort of saying that it's sort of for CEOs now and sort of high-level executives, but down the road here, this sounds like it could be a solution too, as you said at the top there, the Nigerian princes and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll come down to, consumer grade. The big concern for consumers today is people imitating a relative who's traveling, for example. Been lots of stories in the news about this where somebody's traveling, say, to, a country in the Caribbean, and you get an email from them saying, hey, like I was in a car accident. I've been jailed. This isn't my fault. I need $2,000 to get out. And, the story is compelling. It's mentioning information that's specific to the individual about where they're traveling to, what hotel they were in. We'll get down to the consumer level very, very soon, and this will be commonplace. What we are worried about, though, is the bad guys using this technology in the future themselves. But in this case, we are ahead of the bad guys. We hope to maintain that lead.
Yeah, and I don't want to put too much pressure on you here in terms of timelines. What are we talking, like a couple years, 5 years? How quickly do you think that this will become mainstream?
I'm hoping in the 5 year, in the 5 year window. And even that's a hard prediction to make for me, and I'm in the prediction business. The reason is that, over the decades, this measure, countermeasure, attack, defense is moving so, so quickly now that, the bad guys are evolving quickly, and we've got to evolve our defenses just as quickly, especially for big enterprises.
All right, so an executive, a CEO is listening to this right now. How do they get their hands on this if they want to add it to their system?
Contact Trend Micro. We've got presence in a lot of parts of the world and a big presence in Canada. We've got this in beta now and evolving forward. But this is clearly the way the way technology and security is heading. They've gotten away from common viruses. We're moving to things like ransomware, imitating executives, imitating key value accounts to either get a wire transaction or to get access to something else. Hey, I forgot my password. Give it to me right away or I'll fire you. That's the next step in this.
And as we've talked about throughout this discussion, the challenge will always be staying that one step ahead. Well, that wraps up another edition of The Business of Tech. As always, you can find me on Twitter at John Muma. Make sure to tune in next time when we take another look at the business of making tech tick.